Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
You're listening to Griefcast with me, Cariad Lloyd. Griefcast is a place to talk, share and laugh about the peculiar human process of death and grief. Each week, I talk to a different person about their experiences of grief and death as we remember someone that they have lost along the way, whether it was a long time ago or you've just joined the club. Welcome to Griefcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey Griefsters, I hope you're having an okay week. The sun was just really shining, so much so I had to like pull a blind down, and then as I just turned, looked, it's just pouring down. But when you're listening to this, apparently it's supposed to be getting nicer. I know, I'm sorry to be so English and just talk about the weather, but my god, guys, the crazy weather, right? Anyway, I hope you're having an okay week. Thank you so much, as ever, for your beautiful comments about last week's episode with Natalie Morris and the whole series. You've all been so kind and so wonderful. If you have enjoyed it, if it's been any use to you at all, please do rate, review or subscribe, or just tell someone about it. All that stuff really helps and means I can continue to make this podcast. Thank you. This week, I'm talking to writer and comedian and podcaster Helen Duff. Helen is the host and creator of the Come As You Are podcast, which, as you'll hear, is all about orgasms, which we talk a little bit about. It's nice not to instantly talk about death on the show. So that was lovely. It's a brilliant podcast. Very, very interesting. She's an amazing comedy performer and improviser. She has an improvised show called Makers of Meaning that she does online as well. And she is, a brilliant human. Helen came in to talk to me about her grandma, who died last year. Helen, do you want to just briefly say what the podcast is about, just so people know? I'd be worried that someone's listening to a death podcast, jumps to yours. I was like, whoa.
Yeah, quite a transition. Although I guess, in a way, the French call it a mini-death, don't they?
Yes, it's all about, I love that phrase.
It's all about orgasms, by the way, just in case we don't even mention that, get straight onto the French. It's all about orgasms. I talk to women and non-binary folk about orgasms because I didn't used to be able to have them, and then about 30 I discovered I could, having completely given up.
Wow.
So I think it's quite a good jumping off point to talk about things like identity and sense of self and relationship with the body, and also just kind of pleasure in general. It doesn't have to be sexual. So we talk about all those kinds of things. And it's so exciting to think like, okay, I've spoken to people that were obvious, like the ones I really wanted to talk to immediately.
Yeah, people who are like public about their orgasm
in that
history.
First series. Yeah.
Some people are like, I know about their orgasms from watching their comedy.
I mean, I guess that's true of me. I'm probably the architect for that. But for now, this second series has been really fascinating, talking to people like historians, historians, and people who are more kind of activists and just from different walks of life. Really exciting, yeah.
Yeah, God, that's it. Have you read there's a book called The Same, I'm sure, accidentally.
I haven't read it. I should do.
Oh,
it looks
that
great.
That is really, it's by Emily Nagoski. Mm. And she has another book, just to... Where did I put it? Because I'm reading it. Oh, it's called Burnout, which she wrote with her sister, which is also brilliant. But Come As You Are, I think is... Oh, this is very off topic for Griefcast, but it's really interesting about, yeah, like how female sexuality, like the sort of the science bit works, really. Mm. What happens? And it's fascinating. And I found, yeah, when I read that, there was loads of stuff in that. I was like... What? If someone had explained that to me at 16, like you've all these things, you're like, oh, I see, that's how that works. Like, just, yeah, so I think it's amazing that you're doing
a Does it go into it. Anything around, because it kind of links with what I'm listening to at the moment. I'm listening to hypnobirthing tapes at the moment.
Oh, of course, which we should say you are
pregnant.
Heavily up the duff.
Up the duff.
I'm so sorry to make that awful.
No, it's absolutely fine. What a tragedy that Edinburgh isn't happening this year, just so I can use that title. I mean, that's
and
the only reason.
I thought that this morning. I was like, up the duff. And then I thought, Cara, don't make that joke. And I thought, oh, but if she'd had Edinburgh, she could have done that. That would have been really good.
That's really the biggest loss to us all in terms of missing Edinburgh this year. But I've been listening to those tapes and, yeah, the science behind the way in which the fear response means that the two muscles of, like, the uterus and the cervix either contracting or relaxing. One has to do one and the other has to do the other in order to get the baby out easily. If fear gets in, then those two things do the opposite. So the uterus doesn't... The uterus, whatever, it does the opposite.
I know what you mean.
And they don't work together. So as a consequence, like, the body is responding to something social or something emotional, but there is like a science behind it. Whereas I think often, because we don't learn about the biology of things, we just blame ourselves in a way that's linked to who we are as people or how we've been brought up or what we've experienced. Whereas actually it's quite a physiological thing that's happening.
Yeah, I did hypnobirthing a lot more with my first. With my second, I was like, I'm having an elective C-section, but it's very helpful. But yeah, I found that really interesting of like, oh, when you're scared or when you're anxious, your body goes, it's not safe to have a baby. Don't do it. And you're like, that makes so much sense.
I just got to the bit in the hypnobirthing tapes where they go, so here's the thing. The mother needs to be in a safe space, sometimes dark, definitely private, or at least where they feel, comfortable. Yeah. Imagine, you know, when you go away for a mini break and you can't poo, and that's what they say.
Oh, yeah,
and then you
get
home and like suddenly you're in the door and you just straight away hit the toilet. It's exactly the same situation. You can't shit when you don't feel safe and you can't shit a baby out either. That's essentially what they said, but in like much more kind of languid, honeyed tones.
My hypnobirthing teacher was like, you know how cats like go off somewhere and have a baby?
Yeah, they
same
love
thing.
A cat.
You need to go off somewhere. Yeah, and it's said in really nice language, but the ultimate, what they're actually saying is like, look, you can't do it in bright lights, with the sun streaming in your face and you're not in comfortable clothes. You need to be relaxed, which makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. We're animals. Makes a lot of sense. I mean, Helen, so obviously that's not why you're here today. So who are we going to be remembering today?
My grandma, Bridie.
What's her name?
So she actually had, which is kind of funny in itself, she had several names. Her Christian name was Bridie, which is the Irish form of Bridget.
Yeah.
But she went by Patricia, because the story goes that when she moved to England, when she was about 16, she started working in Lyons Cake Factory in London. And the girls on the floor with her said, oh, you don't look like a Bridget, you look like a Patricia. And so she just was like, fine, I'll take it. I think underneath that, like, quite lighthearted story, as it seems to be the case with a lot of her stories from her kind of early days, there's actually probably quite a lot of casual racism against, or xenophobia at least, against Irish people. And the fact that, like, maybe in fact the story I was told was they weren't prepared to say Bridget, but probably actually the truth was they weren't prepared to say Bridie because it was unusual. So they just went like, you look like a Pat. And she just took
it's
it, yeah.
Horrible. I have my auntie growing up, her family were from Burma, Myanmar. And I grew up with Auntie Mary. And then eventually someone said, oh, her name's Blossom. And I was like, what? And they were like, Essex family. And they were like, oh, when she went to work at the post office, they said, well, I can't call you Blossom. You look like a Mary.
Unreal.
And it was like, I remember being like a teenager, being like, but that's awful. Like, why have we all called? And they're like, well, just call Auntie Mary. And you're like, and now she completely goes by Blossom. Well, she's like, reclaimed it, thank God. But yeah, isn't that funny that it probably was told to you as a jokey, oh, they call me Pat, but actually I'm sure it was
Bridie was an unusual name at that time. So or funny. Maybe just too Irish.
Yeah, I mean, I love the name Bridie. I actually have it as my middle name.
It's beautiful.
And she didn't ever use it. She used either Bridget or Pat, mainly Pat. And then occasionally, like, she was a very strong Catholic. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know whether it was just because it was said in the service, but I'm pretty certain whenever I went to church with her, to the cathedral, the priests would always call her Bridget. So I don't know. I think she maybe picked and chose who she used what
name. When it suited her, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah, you want the priest to call you because it's a saint, isn't it? So maybe that's more
maybe
appropriate.
Yeah.
So when did your grandma die?
So she died in December. She actually died this year. Well, like the year just before 2020.
Oh wow. So very recent then.
Yeah, super fresh.
Wow.
And what happened was I don't know how you talk about lucky with it. We got lucky in the sense that given this year and everything that's happened with coronavirus, she died before the Christmas lockdown happened.
Right, okay.
And so she was in the hospital. I probably should just get it out of the way. She was hit by a bus. And it was a real shock. She went in to buy some... She lived in Norwich her whole life. After she moved from London up to Norwich with my papa, they owned a chain of bakeries up there. They set up a chain of bakeries that were really successful and very, very popular. And she loved Norwich so much. And like in a way that is comical, because she said to me, she actually said to me well before any of this happened, we went to the coast with her, my boyfriend and I, in the September, you know, the easings of the lockdowns are so there was a little easing in September when you could go on holidays. Anyway, we went to the coast with her to Goldstone and she loved it. She loved that beach. She said, Norfolk has the most beautiful beaches in the world. I won't be told different. She was quite adamant. She's quite funny in that way. I won't be told different. And I feel so blessed to have lived in Norwich. Mm. I'm so grateful to have lived my life in Norwich. I want for nothing because I've been able to live
that's
in Norwich.
That's what she said.
Yeah. And it was amazing because, so what happened was...
Sorry, that's just like the most beautiful, sweet
so touching
thing to say.
It makes it sound so sweet. Like she actually was a complete, you know, like she was such a strong woman, brilliantly sarcastic and very funny. But she would come out with these... I want for nothing because I lived in Norwich. She was one of those people who was very... Because she was so religious and she got up to say her Hail Mary every morning. And she had this real presence, you know. I think effectively had a meditation practice, if you look at it in another way. Because she would get up really early and do her rosary and all that. So she was very grateful for what she had. And she said to me repeatedly during that year, when most of the time we just spoke on the phone, that she had no regrets. You know, if she got coronavirus, you know, she understood, etc. And so that was when she got hit by a bus. It was kind of extraordinary because it stopped. She basically, for someone who loved Norwich so much, she shut down. I'm laughing because it's kind of the only way I can really process it. She was such a powerful person, such a strong figure in my life, that honestly, I think the way I've processed it as a comedian probably is part of it, that like there's no other way she would have gone.
They
couldn't have taken her any
like,
other way. Yeah,
you die as you live. That's what I found quite
like it took a whole bus
sometimes. I had that with my dad, of like he was such a strong personality, and like it even though he went quick, it was he fought it. And then I think a nurse years and years ago said, yeah, you die as you live. And I thought, oh yeah, you can't, yeah, it's
yeah,
it sometimes affects it.
She shut down the whole of the city centre, like they cordoned off all of the main streets. It was in the news. And that upsets me actually a bit, because I know that she was a very proud person. And having been hit by, I got hit by a van once on my bike. And I remember the thing that kind of scared me the most about it, other than will I be able to walk again, was also all these people looking at me and feeling really embarrassed by the attention.
Yeah.
Because she got taken into hospital and she lived for a week on, you know, ventilators, etc. And we were told that we couldn't go and see her because of coronavirus, and also because it was unlikely that she would last a day, right? After she first got hit. And then she actually lasted a week. And 2 days after she'd gone into the hospital, they said her family can come in and see her. So her immediate, you know, sons and daughters came. And then she has lots of grandchildren, including me, and then lots of great-grandchildren as well, like a huge family. And so the grandchildren were told, like, on the third day, you can come, and most of them live in Norwich. And so my boyfriend and I were like, shall we go? Really torn. Because I was... So coinciding with this is she was hit on the Monday. On the Thursday, we had our 12-week scan for the baby.
Yeah.
And we hadn't told anyone other than my grandma up until that point. So she was the only person we'd confided in, because my parents are divorced and I didn't want to tell one of them without telling the other.
Yeah.
And I also didn't want to tell them because of COVID. We were really conscious of, like, if we lost the baby, we probably would tell them about it afterwards. Yeah. But it was just such a confusing time in terms of people struggling and being afraid that I didn't want to put even more anxiety on that. So it's probably odd, you would think, that I chose to tell my grandma, but she just was the kind of person that I was like, you're the only person I really want to talk to about it. She's seen so many babies be born. She'd had so many babies herself. And she also just... I just wanted to tell her. Anyway, I'm so grateful that I did, because... So we'd been talking about it for weeks, obviously. She'd been giving me loads of advice, etc. And then
was
I told...
Was she excited when
she
you
was
told
really
her?
Excited. Actually, do you know what? Do you know what, Carrie? I say she was excited. I told her, thinking that she would be like, feel so blessed to be the only one who knew. She said to me, Helen, I wish you hadn't told me. I wish you hadn't. I can't believe you told me before you told your father. I'm going to get in so much trouble. So much trouble, because she's his mother. And she said to me, You should have waited until you knew for sure. I said, I didn't want someone to tell you. We had this really funny kind of telling each other off, but in a quite, sarcastic way, relationship. And I said, I thought you would be happy. I thought you'd feel grateful to know you're so lonely up there. She's like, I'm not that lonely. People still come and see me through the window all the time. So funny. Anyway.
I don't need your news. Now you burden me with your news.
Exactly.
I'm so glad you did. That's amazing.
So lucky. Because then we told my mum on the Saturday. We went for a walk with her because we wanted to do it in person, right? So we told my mum on the Saturday. She was extremely pleased. My stepdad too. We told my dad on the Sunday. We went for a walk with him. You know, it was all about, like, arranging outdoor meets.
Yeah.
And so everyone... And then I told all my brothers on the phone. We told all my boyfriend's family, I think, because we knew we weren't going to see them in person. We told them all on, like, Thursday on, like, video call and stuff, because they live quite kind of across the world. And so everyone knew. And it was like, oh, okay, this big weight had been lifted, because we'd felt quite isolated with this information. Coupled with, like, the isolation already of COVID. And... then on the Monday night, my dad called me and said, Grandma's been hit by a bus in the centre of Norwich and she's gone into hospital. And it was just like this transition was so extreme. So when it came to deciding whether to go and see her in the hospital, we were like, should we go? Is it dangerous for the baby? But also, is she going to last? Because the information we were getting was she's deteriorating really rapidly. It's 2 hours... 2.5 hours drive, you might not get there, right?
Yeah.
So I actually had a call with my agent, who I hadn't told about the pregnancy. And I was like, I'd whipped myself up into such a frenzy that I was like, I have to tell her, because I've been keeping this information from her for ages. And I really wanted to know. But at the same time, like, if she's going to drop me, I'd be like, this is so awful, because she never would. Like, it's so her character.
It's pregnant, but as we were talking about before, so that the paranoia of a female performer being pregnant, you just think, oh my god, is this it, my life's over.
You just turn everyone into monsters in your mind. You're like, they just won't want this used goods.
Anyway, she's done now.
So
she's done.
Hit her with this information on a video call. I went, hi, so great to see you, got a few things to cover, just so you know, I am pregnant, I know, really exciting. Yeah, just had the 12-week scan, everything looks good. Also, my grandma just got hit by a bus, so she's in hospital and we're just about to maybe leave to go and see her. And my agent was like, just go, we don't have to have this meeting. I was like, but I need to let you know, so the podcast, we've got a few people coming up, we're about to release, because I'd held, because I hadn't phoned her.
Yeah.
We hadn't really been phoning anyone because we don't like lying or hiding stuff. So the fact that we were keeping the baby information meant that we just stopped contacting people.
Yeah, you just can't, because people go, how are you? And you're like, pregnant, but I can't tell you.
Exactly.
And so it's all you can, it's really
so
hard.
So I hit her with all of this info and she was like, okay, breathe. We can do this call whenever and please go, you should go. And I was like, you're right, I should go. So we put down the, well, however you put down a video call, closed the laptop, came out, and to Sam was like, I think we should go. He was like, great, I'm ready. And he was incredible because he had lost his grandmother weirdly exactly 9 years before, like the same day.
Whoa, that's
and,
so weird.
And again, she was an incredibly like powerful person in his life. But she, a lot of his family live in the States. He's from America. His parents are both from America. And so he'd gone out to, he knew that she actually had quite a long-term condition, I think, but he'd been told like she's deteriorating and it's likely she will pass away. And so he'd caught this flight, but it was when, what was it? It was like this, I don't think it were, I can't remember what the storm was called, but there was a big storm on.
Yeah.
And it was like a kind of whiteout, effectively. So the plane was delayed. He flew to New York. He got there and she died an hour before he arrived.
Oh.
So he had
a much more like, you need to do this.
From his perspective, he was like, if we drive for 2.5 hours and she's died, nothing lost. Absolutely nothing lost.
Yeah, and you're
lost.
Still in the place. You know, you still made it. You still get to see her body, maybe. I know, I think sometimes we forget like what you're going to say goodbye doesn't necessarily need that person to be completely conscious and like, hello, yes, oh, goodbye, okay, thank you. Like, those moments don't exist. So you went and you got to the hospital and, did she... So
She was still alive, definitely still alive, and she was still, I think, aware. My mum said to me afterwards that with her mum, the doctors had said to her, you know, one of the last things to go is hearing.
That's what they say, yeah. That's often said, yeah.
I held her hand, I didn't really, in a way, a great thing about the fact that we knew because of the injuries that she wasn't going to, there was, you know, no way she was going to come back from that. So I kissed her, you know, I had no fear about, you know, if I didn't have COVID, but if I had, then I obviously could have passed it on to her. And I didn't worry about that at all. I was very, I really stroked her and held her hands and spoke to her. And I got to say all the things that I think if I hadn't gone physically, would have just been circling around my brain. For a long time, because it was such a surreal series of events in terms of like at the end of that week we got locked down for the Christmas lockdown. At the end of that week they then were like, oh, you can't see any of your family for Christmas either, and so the whole week was just full of quite big drama, from both like brilliant to awful. And I don't think physically I would have taken it in. When Dad called, I couldn't really process the information at all that had happened to her. And so seeing her in the hospital, weirdly, even though for various reasons, by that point she didn't have her own teeth because the year before she'd had quite a serious heart surgery and they'd taken all her teeth out. And she normally wore false teeth, but obviously in the hospital she didn't have them in. And because of the way her jaw had been broken, she sort of, you know, her face had gone quite slack. And she had bruises underneath what we could see, the sheets, from where the impact had happened. But oddly, she didn't look as bad as I had imagined.
Yeah, I guess when you hear car accident, traffic accident, your head is like, oh my God, unrecognizable.
So I think in my head, I had thought that she would be, I think it was great that I could see her and she was still grandma. And if you sat on like a certain side of the bed, you could see less of, you know, in terms of bruising. And it was really amazing to be able to Like, my boyfriend came in with me and he just sort of sat with me while I was with her. And to begin with, it was odd to speak to her. Yeah, I had all these kind of things running around in my mind that I wanted to say. And it felt very almost stagey to speak to somebody who's not going to talk back to you and like and kind of rehearse. But the more I spoke, the more natural it felt. And I let myself cry and I let myself talk to her about everything and just about how much she meant to me and how much she would be missed and how much we loved her and how much I wanted to let her know as well that, like, she could go because she was... You didn't really get much more of a matriarch. Like, she was the head of this really big family. All of the people who had stayed living in Norwich in terms of, like, my aunties and my cousins and my nieces and nephews saw her every day, you know? They spoke to her 3 or 4 times a day. They were really... We spoke, like, once or twice a week, but they were, like... she was so much part of their lives. And I think she didn't die... She didn't die for a week. And part of me thinks it's because she was sort of slowly, like, allowing everyone... Because by that point, everyone had come to say goodbye. Yeah. And also just, like, she just spent a lifetime, really, of enduring so many different shocks and challenges that, like, it's all... That tenacity just seemed to... I can understand why she wouldn't have just sort of gone straight away.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, isn't it? That and it's taken me years to get my head around that. Again, like we're saying, like, you know, you die as you live. And having spoken to more people who work in palliative care of, like, and obviously it doesn't always work this way, but yeah, I think sometimes people need to know it's okay to go. And I think, yeah, I can't help but see some... I'm sure any doctor listen, no, there's no science to this feeling, but it's a feeling that, yeah, she wanted to see everybody and was holding out, especially when people are like, oh, there's no way they're going to last a week, and then they do, and then everyone's been ticked off, and you're like, oh, interesting, she held on.
Yeah.
People hold on sometimes, and sometimes they don't, but I'm really, really feel for you because this year has been so strange, and we've all been put through such a weird circumstance, so, you know, normally... normal life, oh, you know, you're this awful tragic accident, of course you just go up to Norwich and see her, but everything now requires this, like, 10-minute discussion with your closest unit of, like, should we do that, is that okay, do you think that's all right that we're gonna drive, like, and it's like this added problem solving we have to do. So to be early pregnant during COVID, heading towards what, you know, we didn't realize was this another massive wave. But I'm really glad that you went, because I think, well, everything I've read, even though I know some people don't make this choice, but everything I've read has said, you know, it's very beneficial to see the body, to see them, because your brain goes, this has happened. And like you said, if you don't see that, it can sometimes be worse than your imagination, I guess, you know?
Definitely. I think I'm a very physical person. I think I need to experience things to, like, be... Yeah, in order for them to register. Yeah, and also a big thinker. So if it was just left to my brain, I would have really... dwelled on it in a way that I don't think would have been healthy at all or helpful. And she did, as we were leaving, I came up really close to her ear and sort of said, you know, the last things I wanted to say to her, and she did open her eyes and, you know, look at me. So I think she was still there for sure.
Oh, Helen, that's... Like, that's just...
It's so... Do you know what's so weird about this time is that... because it's obviously coupled with the pregnancy, and I feel so grateful that I got to tell her about it and have those first kind of 12 weeks or so. But she just, like, I'm close to my mum for sure, and I don't want to take anything away from her, but it was a different relationship with my grandma. And I think in many ways she and I are really similar in character, which I say with, like, great reverence, because it would be a huge compliment to be like her. And I just really wanted to be able to talk to her. I quite regularly want to be able to ask her questions about how she labored and stuff, because we never got to that. Because, like, I don't really have my mum's legs. I have, like, my grandma's really strong haunches. Yeah. So I'm wondering if that's going to affect, like, how I, like, ground down or whatever. And she
That stuff like that is, because I don't know, like, my mum at all. Like, I do... obviously with face, but I have my grandma's figure, absolutely. This tiny short Welsh woman. And my mum had like really easy births, so I was a bit cocky. I was like, I'll probably be right, two easy births. And then when I went through what I went through, I was like, oh yeah, I don't look like her, do I? I have my grandma. And it's that weird thing of being someone who gives birth, of like, you have to sort of suddenly assess your body in a different way and be like, oh, those hips that I've always been complimented on are very small. They are not going to push a baby out. Oh, man. Like, all my life, I was like, oh, yeah, great. And I'm like, oh, when you want a baby, that's when the big hips are very, very welcome. So, yeah, it's hard that you didn't. I'm obviously amazing that you got, that she knew. But, yeah, of course you're going to meet. And especially you're so fresh. Like, it only just happened.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Welcome back to Griefcast with Carrie Adloyd. So what happened about funeral? Because that was hit of lockdown, right?
Yeah, so we got to have the 30... We got 30, I think. And we did it in the big cathedral in Norwich, which she was a regular attender of. And so we were super socially distanced because it's massive. So
yeah, that's like, what I was going to say. Huge venue. Good work.
Two per row, and then like three rows between each. And then we Skyped in because she's being Irish and from a family of like eight daughters and one brother. She, up half of her family was sent to America basically because it was that era.
Yeah.
So all of this American family like Skyped in. It's so funny when like the duties or like the responsibilities for arranging the funeral were kind of portioned out. My cousin, my incredible cousin, took a lot of it because she is really into organising events and stuff. And so in a way, they were so close. And I think it was really important for her to take that role. But my brother got given like Skype duties, like Zoom duties, which is such an odd, like, ordinarily would never be something you'd have to consider. Anyway, yeah, so we were able to have, we had like the funeral at the cathedral with like the high Catholic service, and then my dad did a memorial, which was amazing. He's a brilliant public speaker. I've never seen it before. Like, predominantly he would have just done it in a business setting.
Yeah.
And I thought he was going to be a mess because they were extremely closed.
Yeah.
And he held it together in this way that was like extraordinary. And then there was this quite funny clash because I had said that I'd like to say some words as well, but they hadn't, I don't think that had been communicated through to the kind of the priest who was like putting it all together. And so as a consequence, they'd scheduled it like really specifically, and I thought, because I was doing a reading, I could just say a few words after the reading. The priest was like, no, the choir comes in then, and it's all like it's in the order of service, so we can't change it, really sticking to the letter. So I spent the whole service going like, when am I going to say these words that I prepared? Should I just not say them? And then after Dad had done this incredible speech, which is so beautiful, this eulogy rather, that just captured her and like all of the funniness of her life and all of the kind of love that she gave to her family. The priest was like, and now, and just like gestured to me, and I was like, how can I follow that? It felt really, I felt like trying to do a gig
after someone absolutely smashed it. You're like, oh, no.
It's just like, if I was the MC and this guy just headlined, I'd just come on and go like, thanks everybody, what a great night.
Yeah,
and then go off. But instead I had this like, I did have something prepared that I'd kind of, and because my dad's eulogy had been so affecting, I barely... You know, I got the words out, but I was extremely emotional. And afterwards, I had this great conflict of feeling like, should I not have spoken? Was it more about me than it was about her and stuff? And my boyfriend reassured me, but it just felt really odd. Like, I definitely should have spoken before my dad instead of following him. So it was tough. It was weird.
You didn't know he was going to smash out the park.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's tough. I've spoken at lots of funerals and you never know. Like, sometimes you're like, thank God the performer is here. I can perform. I can do this. I can pull this back. Other times you're like, excuse me, that uncle who works in HR seems to be an incredible speaker. What?
Yeah.
Did not know that. So yeah, you don't know. And also it's, you know, it's so hard with funeral. I think you have to do what you feel you have to do in a way, you know, as long as it's not, you know, like telling the priest, back off, I've got another 20 minutes, okay? And I'm going to keep going. Like, obviously you have to be respectful.
It's such an odd one to negotiate as well when you do have lots of cousins and siblings.
Yeah, it's such a huge family.
Because I think it's weird. It's so, isn't it funny when your friends and family are really big in real life, like happily hold the floor at a restaurant or, you know, just like a party, whatever, but put them in a like quote unquote public speaking role and they really don't want to go there. So often I'll feel like, oh, should I not, am I, does somebody else want to talk? And then I realize actually, no, they really don't want to.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, it's like, if I don't say something, I feel like I have got this comfort. I'd thought about it for a long time. Like, I've been thinking about it with my grandma for a long time, really. Would I speak at her funeral? And I'd always felt like I would want to, because it's like my way of expressing my love, I think.
And you did what was the reading? Was it a Bible reading?
Yeah, it was a Bible reading. And to be fair, I didn't really know. It was about, I think I was thinking so much about what I was going to say. I was kind of like, oh yeah, I'll do the reading as well. Sure. And the reading was really beautiful. And people said to me afterwards, well, I've never heard such a good reading in church. And I was like, oh, seriously, I just read that. Whereas for me, the thing that held so much emotion, they were like, barely heard it, mate. It looked like you got something out of your system. Yeah.
You needed to do it. We weren't really focused, but when the Bible hit, I was there. Had you talked to her about death at all?
We'd spoken about it in the sense that, like, on that holiday to the coast, she was saying consistently, my boyfriend like worships her because he just thinks he's into meditation and kind of trying to be present. And I say that as if it's like a hobby, like most people I think at this time are really trying to. But he thought she was such a G because she could just sit and kind of, she'd been on her own. That's such a bad way to phrase it. I hate it. My mum, when she and my dad divorced, people always used to say, oh, she was on her own for 10 years before she married my stepdad.
Yeah, it's like, I wasn't and it's on like, my own.
We were there the whole time.
Yeah.
Me and my brother were present for the whole time. She wasn't like completely alone. But in terms of her marriage, my papa died very young, relatively. And so she had, lived without him for about 30 years.
Yeah.
And so she had this capacity to kind of sit and be and just sort of like look at the horizon for a good like couple of hours, just thinking, just kind of, and my boyfriend really respected that kind of capacity to just be, you know, without having to distract. Yeah. She never had a phone. Whenever you were with her, it felt quite funny if you took out your phone because you were just really conscious of being distracted, and she was always very present. So we'd talked about, like I said, the fact that she said to me, so she managed the money in the bakery to the extent that she would like carry home cash in like these heavy sacks. And then you just had this image of her that was always ever so slightly tinged with, she probably could have been an organised crime boss. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
given the right/wrong circumstances, she knew what to do. Yeah,
exactly. Like, you were never certain whether there was kind of like a hidden basement vault where she kind of kept things off the side from the tax man or whatever. And she'd hate me saying that so much. It was just like, I would tease her with those kinds of things, even though she was whiter than white. She was very hardworking and very driven and like a real grafter. And she always used to say to me, because I would always talk to her about, I think to prove myself really, I would always like list off all the things I was doing so that she didn't think I was lazing about being an artist. And she was the one who was always saying to me, you have to take your pleasures where you can. You know, me and Papa, we went on the QE2 twice. You know, so they would work really hard, but they would also spend their money. And they would definitely share it out. They were really generous with their family. So I think she had a life where she had been really in the moment, and she'd really enjoyed, she'd really worked for her money, and then she'd really enjoyed spending the money. Mm. And that was the way she spoke about her whole, that was kind of the approach she took to her whole, way of being, was to just, you make the most of this moment, and then if they take you, is the way she used to say, you know, if God chooses he wants me, then I'm ready. And I genuinely think she believed that, because also, for sure, she definitely thought she would be with my papa in heaven.
Yeah.
And I think that gave her a great sense of, you know, that's who she wanted to be with. And she said, because of how much she sort of valued the economy. Mm. So she said to me, Helen, I don't, I've had my time. I've enjoyed my life. I've lived to the full. I'm 87 years old. And if I get the COVID, it's more important that these people are able to go back to work. You know, Marks and Spencer's has been closed for months now, and it's likely they might go into administration. I don't want my life to be put above Marks and Spencer's. She loved Marks and Spencer's so much. She lived for M&S. Those kinds of things, like, because she really worried about people being out of work, unemployment.
Yeah.
You know, she worried about the legacy of COVID and how protecting people of her age was going to ultimately potentially hit people who are younger. You know, like the idea of economic collapse is not a price worth paying to keep my life. You know, so it was funny that actually she didn't go. So we talked about life in that sense.
Wow.
We talked about death in that sense, that she was openly sort of saying to the world, put me out. Put me out.
I guess also, I mean, this is me making 2 and 2 = 5, but I guess I'm assuming that the childhood that she'd had, like you said, people going to America, people coming to London, had been a stressful economic time. So for her, it was like, we can't do that again. Like, you've got to go, you've got to move forward, all of that kind of aspect.
Yeah,
but that is incredible.
I think it was very practical. I think she had grown up, her mother had died with the last of her sisters. So she was right bang in the middle of these 8 sisters.
Wow.
And her eldest sister had basically become the mother and had raised them. And so I think there was definitely a self-sufficiency. There was definitely a need to make your own way in the world. And with the idea of changing her name, for example, I think there would be an element of assimilation to that. But I also think there was just an element of, like, practically, like, what can I do to make things easier?
Yeah,
and also as well, like, I think about it, it's nice to have a nickname.
Even
if it does become your full-time name.
Yeah,
it's she was really into her community. Like, she was really well known. The fact that we had such a small funeral, I think it would have been packed to the rafters if it hadn't been COVID times.
It's so hard to have, like you said, this would be, you know, like I said, a sad story anyway, but to have this in COVID and then to go into that Christmas, which we all went through, which was complete lockdown. Yeah, how did you feel like your grieving has been affected by the bizarre circumstances that this has occurred in? Because obviously you knew your grandmother, you know, we know grandparents are old, it's going to happen eventually, but to have it be given at this point in time in your life is unusual, obviously.
It's such a funny combination of things. When it first happened, I felt like, so in that first 12 weeks of pregnancy, I had been seeking like perinatal mental health support because I think the isolation of COVID, the fact that we weren't able to do our jobs in terms of comedy, the fact that I was going through this massive life change, which affects women anyway in terms of like, what's my identity going to be afterwards? How's it going to affect my career at a time when I couldn't do my career really?
Yeah, yeah.
So already it felt like that there was a kind of loss happening there. So I just, my brain was a little bit, so I was seeking support, therapy through the NHS, and it was taking a long time because I had to have like assessment after assessment in order to kind of qualify. And is how it felt, at least. I know that probably isn't the right word, qualification, but sometimes it feels like you're having to prove how much you're struggling in order to be helped. And because they're so stretched, obviously. And after she died, my immediate reaction was, okay. And this is, I'm acknowledging this is like heavily full of judgment. I don't feel like this now, but I was like, okay, I've got to stop with that bullshit now. I can't be wobbly. I can't be vulnerable. I have to like step into my grandma's power. If she's not going to be physically around anymore, I have to take what she always gave me, which was this strength and this reassurance and this guidance and this sense of like, actually, ultimately, this sense that I was deeply loved, always from her. Yeah, I never questioned that from her, which I think is a real gift, because often I had done with, like, you know, other various family things, but she was always very stable. And I had to take that and I had to, like, put that into my body, put that into my baby, and also just, like, the way I was approaching things. So I weirdly drew this quite kind of, like, in the most immediate response, is quite kind of practical, like, clarity of, like, I have to... I have to stop mucking about. I have to stop feeling sorry for myself and being like, what the hell am I going to do?
Yeah.
That didn't last.
Good, because that's such a hot... I was going to say, like, that's classic, like, first reaction to grief. And I was like, you're not... You know, this is so fresh for you. And I remember, like, after my... When my dad died, like... I remember hearing me and my brother say, you know, oh, yeah, you know, he wouldn't want to be ill for a long time. So, yeah, you know, people, these things happen. And my brother was like, yeah, and I'll take over his business. And it, like all these things, you just, yeah. Because, you know, and you're just in shock. So your brain, your mouth is just saying things and your brain is like, what are you saying? That's not who we are. And you're like, no, don't worry, I got it. Yeah, it's going to be fine. And, you know, obviously terrible, but there you go, people, you move on. Because you're just trying to... process what the fuck just happened.
Someone said to me, and I actually was like, no, not that, thank you. I won't have that. I won't be taking that, thank you. Someone said to me, well, you know, with this baby that's coming, often people think that, like,
God.
Someone has to go in order for someone else to come through.
Yeah.
And I was like, do you know what actually is not going to be helpful for me is imagining that in order for my baby to live, my grandma had to die. I was like, I'm not having that. I'm not having any of that. Thank you very much for your offering of very bizarre folklore.
I actually, weirdly, that must have been my daughter. My grandma died just before my daughter was born, about 4 months, but I was not close to my grandmother for various reasons. No offense, grandma, but she was not a cuddly lady. And I similar things, or people were like, oh, well, you'll call her after a second. And I was like, we had a very difficult relationship. So no, like, obviously it's very sad and I'm sad, but like, yeah, it's, I think people want a neat narrative, like, oh, that's why, and oh, now her soul will be, and you're like, that's weird. And also you're like this, I think it annoys me when people do this like to babies, as if they're not a person already. So it's a person already.
You can't just be like, it's really tough, the idea of naming, because I was like, as we've talked about, I really love the name Bridie.
Oh, it's beautiful.
And I had always thought about it, about using it as a kid's name. But I talked about it with my boyfriend, and this is before we knew what gender the baby would be. And he, I think, quite rightly said, like, it's such a big legacy as well.
Yeah.
Like, and also I think for my dad, etc., to hear the name, it's such a, it's tough to pass on within those three generations, I think, is tough. Maybe if it had been like a great, you know, if it's like a bit higher, a bit more distant. But if it's so close, I know somebody who all the men in their family are the same name. And I guess at that point,
it's,
then they all go by their second names. That's why it's silly.
Oh, right, yeah. Because otherwise it's so, and everyone has to be listed second name. Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like, And my grandma that died was the Welsh side. And I did think, oh, that would be, you know, should I acknowledge that in some way? But then actually, my husband lost his mum about 6 years ago, and he was very, very close to her. And we sort of chose, my daughter has the same middle name as she as his mum. So we did it that way, because it was like, and yeah, we kind of felt, also it's funny because people were like, oh, you could name her after his mother. And then we were like, oh, we don't like that name. So you're like, how much do you want to honour someone? You're like, no, not that name. Yeah, I like it. It was her, but I wouldn't love it for, it would be a bit of an odd name now. So you're like, you sort of realise, like, I want to honour them, but like within my realms of standards of what I want. But I agree, it's a lot. And obviously, if you choose to do that, it's absolutely fine. But I think especially with you being so fresh and that grief, and like what I've experience when talking to people a lot who are pregnant when something happened is like, and maybe this is a shit thing to say to you, hopefully it's not, but like you almost have to delay your grief a bit because you're busy building a baby. So you kind of have to go, I can't really get into this as fully as perhaps I would if it was just me. Like, I have someone else to think about. So
yeah, totally.
I know a lot of women that have been pregnant, had a grief, gone, okay, it's there, had the baby, and then it maybe hit them a little bit later, not in a like negative way, but just because when you're pregnant, it kind of takes up all the room.
My family were really protective of me, actually.
Yeah.
At the funeral, when we were deciding whether or not to go in, they were really... And it was funny because it's so funny. When you're a really independent person who sees themselves... I'm quite kind of like... I'm physically quite messy. I sort of throw myself into things. I'm always like chucking myself. I'm always cycling everywhere and running everywhere and chucking myself about. So it was really funny being kind of, I guess, coddled in that way. People, you know, trying to wrap me in. And I appreciated it. I did. I really appreciated it. I think what was funny for people around me who were not family, I say I had that odd conversation with my agent. I then, for sort of the next 3 weeks at least, because I felt this need to give people the facts, when I was telling people that I was pregnant, which I did much less than I expected to, because I was expecting to tell people, having held it all in, I then actually really dialed it back because I was like, I don't want to share this information because I feel like it has to come with an addendum.
Yeah.
And so I would tell people and then I'd be like, but also this just happened with my grandma, so we're not necessarily in this hugely crazy celebratory mode. And I felt so sorry for other people because it was like they went cross-eyed. You know, one side of their face was like, congratulations. The other was like, oh my God. And it was like, they were stuck in the matrix. Difficult for them to compute how to communicate with that.
Especially at this time as well, I think, because everyone's so confused anyway and haven't really spoken to anyone. So any kind of social interaction that's awkward or, you know, unexpected, you're like, how does this work? What, congratulations, Helen, but also, oh shit. Like,
totally.
Yeah, it's really, it's funny you say that about being coddled as well. When I was pregnant with my first child, I was still touring with Ostentatious. Like, I was lifting stuff and they would try and grab things off me. I was like, oh my God, come on guys. Like, who cares? Oh my God. Like, this is so patronizing. And then when I had her, my recovery was quite hard because I'd sort of overdone it. Because I was really working like up to the last minute because you've got to work, right? You've got to work. Perform,
yeah,
got to work.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, with my second, I think once you've had them, they got bigger, you realise like what people are saying is like, there's a person in there. But when you're pregnant the first time, I think you just feel like, well, I'm pregnant. I am.
Yeah.
Like, and then with the second run, I was like, I'm not doing anything. You can lift it. Like, open the door. I was so completely like, coddle, please. And if people didn't coddle enough, I was like, what are you doing? I'm pregnant. I can't possibly walk up these stairs. Because I felt completely different about it. But yeah, obviously, each pregnancy is really different. And it's just it's a lot to go through, I suppose. And I suppose that's what people's faces are giving you when you tell them, is they're like, not only are you pregnant, not only have you lost a very important person to you, but also in the middle of the pandemic and your industry isn't working. Like, oh, that's a lot. It's a lot to balance.
The funniest thing was, I am going through all of this and thinking about comedy in general and what it's going to be like on the other side of both the birth and the pandemic.
Yeah.
My grandma and I feel like so much of my sense of humour and kind of cheekiness even like storytelling style has been passed down from her, like is rooted in her. And so it's this funny feeling of when I burst into life occasionally, as is lovely, you know, when you just get in a funny mood and you can feel yourself kind of in the flow, as it were, which I've noticed happens less because I'm gigging less, and just like the deadline of a gig really and a live audience really turns that juice on. But when it has happened occasionally during this time, I felt this really odd combination of like delight to be in that place, but also I guess it's grief, because it's like, oh, that's when I actually feel really connected to her and kind of realize most deeply what I've lost, in a way that it's a really tense combo of like being so grateful to have that legacy and also remembering who that's come from.
I think I'm really glad that you used the word grief, because I was talking about this, I was interviewing someone yesterday, and I think sometimes we try and pin it down of like, oh, I'm sad about this, I'm this, and it's like, it's just grief. It's just, that is what, like, what you're describing as grief is this, it's lots of things at the same time, and it's this feeling of like, wow, I knew them and I was loved, but they're also not here, and also I'm so glad that they were here, but also like, fuck, like, that's shit that people go and they can't stay with you, and you, all you have is this memory. And I think especially with children, when you move into that, you know, if you choose to move into that stage of your life, of thinking, oh, they won't know them, and where have I picked up that skill from? And like, it's sort of like fundamental human stuff, isn't it? Of like who you are, the basis of who you are and why you are like that. Mm. But it's good that you're noticing it and experiencing it and all of those things. That's all you can do, really, is just allow yourself to feel them. And it is hard, especially, as you said, like, because we're not gigging at all really, or we're hopefully starting again, and that, like you said, the joy of silliness. And I wonder if the pandemic wasn't on, if you would still have that, like if gigs were readily available to you, would you still be like, oh, yeah, I don't know if I can be funny, actually? Because I definitely felt that when I was at my most griefy. It was like walking on stage to be funny, it was like, oh, like,
yeah, no, thank you. I definitely had plans, and this just shows how desperately I was thinking, gosh, if I'm gonna have to have this time off to have the baby, I better milk the pregnancy for some sort of career value, right? I was like, when we finally are safe to tell people I'm pregnant, I'll get into TikToks. I'll do some pregnancy TikToks. And then with my plan.
Oh, I've thought that occasionally. Oh, maybe I should do that. I should do TikTok. And I'm like, I'm so tired. I'm just so tired.
And then everything that happened with Grandma was like, I don't want to be public at the moment. Yeah. I don't want to put myself out there in any way. Yeah.
I think that's good that you're listening to yourself. Like, I think that's really a really strong choice, because people don't. They go, well, that's a silly feeling. That's silly. You're probably fine. Come on. And that has the voice they've internalized. And clearly you have a nicer, kinder voice that's like, yeah, I just don't want to, so I'm not going to. Because I think if this lock, you know, I hate saying, like, if it's taught us anything, because what was it taught us is chaos exists. There's nothing you can do about most things. But like, if it can teach us anything, is like, yeah, that being quiet and being private, I guess, especially as performers, is actually no bad thing. I've definitely had a few moments of like, of course I miss it. I miss it so much. But equally, having time away from it has been, quite helpful to evaluate what it did, what I was using it for, what it was filling, and all of that stuff. So, yeah. So your baby's due quite soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how are you feeling now, like you said, with that sense of, I mean, I guess we're easing, so that's helpful, hopefully. Mm. But that sense of like going through grief, being isolated, and the mental health, like, are you feeling like it's helpful that you can see more people?
Definitely. Yeah. I think it's so helpful. I think the way I communicate, I mean, it's so clear in my stand-up and everything I do, is through conversation and through sharing experiences and asking other people and just chatting it out.
Yeah.
And not being able to do any of that really impacted me, really made me feel quite isolated and quite kind of at a crisis point. And also, I'm sure, just hormonally, I think I've gotten on better with the third trimester than any of them, because the second trimester, everyone kept saying to me, "Ooh, are you feeling those sweet second try hormones?" And I was like, no, I think I'm in grief.
Yeah, and, grieving. So yeah. Those second try hormones are like, not enough, mate. Need more.
Yeah, so now I feel a bit more like, now the prospect of the baby being here is like much more present. I'm really pumped for it. I know I'm doing all of this listening to the tapes now, probably quite late in the day, but I'm going to start, I will start doing the yoga.
Oh, mate, don't worry. You've got plenty of time, 30
but,
weeks.
The prospect of the birth is weirdly like a show. Like, not in the sense that I'm going to perform it, but like, I did the marathon a couple of years ago.
Oh, wow.
And I really loved the challenge of it. I mean, I would say you can prepare for a marathon so much more efficiently than you can for birth. A marathon, do like, you have a set number of miles you run every week and it increases by 1 mile a week. Pregnancy, you're like just waiting and doing some stretches. But yeah, so I'm kind of having that is exciting. And also the prospect of being able to, I think we're going to have a ceremony, like a celebration ceremony for grandma where we can touch, where we can hug and drink and go to a pub. She was actually a lifelong teetotaler, so it was quite odd that we all felt this, we felt so deprived that we couldn't drink. But she was also a great host, so she'd get drinking for everyone else. She just never would drink it herself. And it felt that was the oddest thing to like have this 2-3 hour, because we went to a crematorium after the cathedral. And to have this 2-3 hour, she also played one of her choices of songs, which was so funny, was "You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings." And we were sitting there listening to it in the creme, crying, but also confused, like, who is the wind in this analogy? Because I couldn't tell the kind of person she was. It could be both. Like, she could be telling her family, like, "You are the wind beneath my wings. Yeah. You lift me up." But also reminding us, like, she was the wind beneath our wings.
Don't forget, guys. Yeah. Don't forget.
Exactly.
Like, I know I'm gone, but let's not just rush ahead and like, remember me. Yeah, why not? Exactly. Why not end your funeral with "remember me, guys"? Like,
yeah, exactly.
Did you scatter her ashes? Did you get a chance to?
No, so that's what we're going to do, I think. We'll do a ceremony around that when we can all be together.
Well, Helen, thank you so much for talking to me about her. And I really feel for you, as I'm sure many people will, going through this situation. Hard situation anyway, but to go through it in this insane year that we've had is just, like, hats off to you and all of your family having to deal with funerals in crematoriums when you can't get a hug at the end of it is, really, really challenging. So I hope you do get a little celebration.
Thank you. It's been so nice to talk about her. I don't know if you picked up, but I just like, I actually am probably too much in awe of her. I think, it was so nice to be able to share about her. Yeah.
I think it's nice. I think I was really in awe of my grandpa. And I remember my dad always seeming a bit confused. And I can see, like now, my daughter is so in awe of my grandma. Her grandma. And obviously, I'm not confused, but you start to see that what that generation actually means. And then I think, why not? Why not have a grandparent you're in awe of? It's a nice thing. Even, you might look closer and be like, they did what? Just don't look too close. Well, no, thank you for talking to us about Bridget, Bridie, Patricia, Pat. We'll end on Pat. I'm sure she would appreciate that. It was really lovely.
Thank you.
You can follow Helen on Twitter and Instagram at Duff Marvel. That's DuffMarvel. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Griefcast. The show was edited by Kate Holland. It was recorded remotely in my living room and her recording booth, I think. And the music was provided by the Glue Ensemble. And remember, you are not alone.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.